Welcome to the Leap Health in the Workplace podcast. Leap Health empowers individuals and organisations to improve both their physical and mental health. In this podcast, we explore innovative, bespoke, proven health solutions that will improve your personal and professional productivity and happiness. I'm Anna Redde. Let's get ready to make small steps to leap health. Welcome to the podcast today. And today is an interesting one. It's a topic that I've not really explored before on the podcast, but I think is really, really important in our everyday living right now, particularly after the pandemic when there's more people working from home. And this is around pain management for your personal and professional peace and performance. So hopefully today, you know, you're going to go away with some top tips as to how you can support that reduction in risk of pain, of experiencing pain, but also manage pain as well in your home life, but also in the workplace as well. And today I'm really fortunate to be welcoming Zee Wee, the founder of Physiotherapist at Physiolosophy, bringing over 7 years of experience in the field. After 5 years of dedicated service to the NHS, she ventured into private practice, driven by a deep interest in pain management. And we're going to pick up on this a little bit later on around what really drove that change, because I'm sure there's some people listening to this right now that are contemplating the career, the next step, and how you navigate that change. Zee holds a Master's in Science in Pain Management and contributed to the field through published clinical work on incorporating acupuncture into physiotherapy for musculoskeletal pain. Her commitment to ongoing learning is evident, as she says, abreast of the latest developments in pain management. And this is critical to being successful in your role, is keeping up to date with all the relevant information. So you could have zillions and zillions of qualifications, but unless you're up to date with what's going on in the world, those qualifications are not as impactful. At Physiolosophy, Zee collaborates closely with clients experiencing persistent pain using a holistic approach to tailor individualised treatment plans. Clients can expect a personalised and effective approach to being treated. So in terms of what's happening in the world at large and why is pain management so important, I'm going to go back to a report which I often use and refer to in my workshops, which is the John Lewis Partnership Wellbeing Report. And this actually estimates that by 2025, so we're not long off that, it's going to cost the workplace, due to reduction in productivity and absenteeism, around about £2,605 per employee due to mental health and musculoskeletal conditions. So we're really going to dig deep into those musculoskeletal conditions and how maybe, you know, you as an employer can reduce those costs, can improve your life, and as an employer, how you could reduce those costs and improve the lives of your employees. And both of these two elements, mental health and musculoskeletal conditions, are really, really closely linked, and hopefully we're going to explore and delve a little bit deeper into that. So welcome to the podcast today, Zee. Please tell the listeners a little bit more to your background and what's brought you to where you are today.
Hi, Anna. Hi, everyone. Hi. Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Hello.
My name is Zee Wei, Zee. I have been a qualified chartered physiotherapist in the last, as mentioned, 7 years. And I founded my physiotherapy clinic, Physiolosophy. It's based in Marylebone, London, about 2 years ago. The main aim of Physiolosophy is to promote a preventative holistic approach, as pain is not purely physical. This is something that we will cover quite heavily in the podcast later on. As mentioned by Anna, that I was working full-time in NHS for 5 years prior to this, and I am still working part-time for the NHS as a first contact practitioner, mainly to also keep myself updated in the latest what's going on in healthcare, in the NHS. And I gained interest in pain through my clinical experience, which led me to pursue a master's in pain management. And as mentioned, I have also published some clinical work on incorporating acupuncture in physiotherapy for musculoskeletal pain. And these papers are surrounded particularly on persistent chronic pain.
Interesting. And I like that holistic approach. So I think this is what we see more and more over time is evolving, that it's never going to just be one size fits all, and it's all about that holistic approach and identifying lots of different approaches that are really going to have an impact on that individual. Is there anything else you can provide around the specifics in terms of exactly what you do to give our listeners a greater depth of exactly what you do?
So in my clinic, clients come to me for musculoskeletal pain because that's what my specialty is. Musculoskeletal pain can range from acute injuries based on injuries from sports or any form of exercises. They can also include chronic pain for many, many years. And these two types of clients, they tend to manifest very different symptoms, and they require very different physiotherapy assessment and treatment. So what I often do in my work is I always conduct a really thorough assessment because I believe that the key to the most personalized treatment for you is based on a really good examination. And when I mention about a good examination, it's not purely physical examination. It's also understanding why you're here to see me and what your expectation is from me, because all of these would impact on how you recover, how fast you recover, and whether you will recover the way we expect you to. So in my physio treatments, I include the typical physiotherapy treatments such as hands-on therapy, as mentioned, acupuncture, electrotherapy, and exercise prescription. However, in physiology, how we're different is that we also address other causes that could be contributing to your pain, such as your sleep quality, your stress, your lifestyle, and your day-to-day activity, because all of these will impact on your pain that you experience, your recovery progress, and also your expectations in everything.
Interesting, interesting. And I'm noting that you mentioned sleep in there, which is really, really high on my agenda, and getting lots and lots of recognition now, the importance of a good night's sleep, which can really hugely impact on your pain management. So we're going to now explore a few questions that you said that often come up and might be useful for people to understand a little bit more. And the first one is, some people have said, why is it that my scan result is normal, but I still have pain? Is my pain all in my head? And I think, yeah, we often do hear people say this, I've been suffering with pain for so long, and yet the doctor's done tests on me, it's coming up normal. But, is it me? Am I just losing it? Am I making up this pain in my head? So, what's going on there, Z? Elaborate a little bit more for us, please.
Yes, so this is something that actually came up quite so often in my clinical practice. And this is something that I come across a lot, particularly in my NHS job as a first contact practitioner. So, pain is an experience, as we know. It is not completely physical, and it will not completely reflect on your scan results. Part of understanding your pain is a bit of like a doing, I like to call it a Sherlock Holmes kind of work. So you're discovering, you understand your pain, and your scan can give you a clue as to what's going on, but it wouldn't necessarily always explain your pain. So I have this data study that I often share with my clients and my patients. And it is a study that they looked at participants without any back pain, and they scanned all of them. And they found only 36% of these participants has what we classify a normal MRI scan, and whereas the rest had some sort of disc herniation or disc bulges. But these are people who do not have back pain. So it tells us that, yes, there is a value of MRI scans because it can give us a clue, but it doesn't always necessarily tell us why you're in pain. And in terms of your question, whether pain is all in my head, I'd like to say scientifically there is a brain involvement there, that's for sure. So the brain is in the head, isn't it? So that would be some sort of in, that in that aspect, yes, it is in the brain, because when we talk about pain, we feel something, it goes through our spinal cord and it goes up to our brain, and our brain process it. That's the basics of pain science. And when the brain processes, then we feel the pain. So I don't know if that makes sense. And yes.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I think I'm trying to visualize, where this fits in my life. I'm trying to think back, and when I was pregnant, I remember looking into hypnobirthing, and I guess that's an example, is it, in terms of how you can calm your brain to minimize the pain.
Yes,
Yeah,
So
yeah.
yeah, and pain, like we said the whole time, pain is not purely physical. It is mental. It is a bit of biological. That's more the physical side of thing. It's about socioeconomics. It's about cultural. It's about understanding expectations, mood, sleep. All of that contributes to pain. And as well, that what I find is past experiences that has such a huge impact on how we experience pain later down in life. And past experiences could be what happened to us in childhood, or what happened, or how we perceive things in the past, or what was involved in our life with in the people around us rather than to us personally. So all of these experiences will change and mold how we perceive pain.
Wow, what I'm hearing is that this is super complex. This is not just
Yes.
one solution. This is really complex and has lots into so many factors that can contribute to it, how an individual presents. And going back to that scan, that's a snippet in time, isn't it? That's one moment in time. And as individuals, our body fluctuates in, activity that's going on so frequently that although this information is really empowering, there's lots of other elements that need to be addressed as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you, Z, for explaining that. I think you've delved into lots of points there that it's food for thought. So the next question I've got is, does having osteoarthritis mean that I will have pain? So I think often we assume that osteoarthritis is extremely painful, and I'm sure it is for many people. Does it mean that, is it a given that we're going to have pain with osteoarthritis?
So osteoarthritis is a condition where we all, I would say all of us would have it at some point in our lives, because I like to call it the wrinkles of our joints. Because as we grow older, we can't stop wrinkles from happening. Our hair turns gray. All of these are part of life and part of our aging sort of process. And equally, that will all happen to our joints, our muscles, and our tissue. So it's a process that we can't stop from happening. But having osteoarthritis does not always mean that you have pain. As mentioned, pain is not purely physical. From my experience so far, I find that lifestyle and expectation plays a big factor in this one. For example, if one has been physically active, meaning exercising, looking after their health, diet, lifestyle, well-being, and lead a happier life in all aspect, and having as well a better socioeconomic background, generally osteoarthritis associated pain is lesser. On the other hand, if one has a manual labor, a manual job, they are generally unhappy, they're working really hard, and they haven't got the time to prioritize and look after themselves, osteoarthritis associated pain tends to be greater. So to answer that, no, having osteoarthritis does not always mean to have pain.
Thank you, thank you. You touched on there, someone who's living a healthy lifestyle with osteoarthritis, if they are experiencing that pain and it's compromising their ability to exercise and do the things that they know are good for them to help them overall, what would your advice be in terms of how can people still get that movement? How can they still get that buzz and energy from exercise if they're experiencing that pain?
So in terms of exercise, in that point of view, a graded exposure of exercise would be really important because joints like to be moved. But how much it wants to be moved is a bit of a discovery. Like, you want to discover how much you can move and gradually build yourself way up from there. But also equally, changing your perception that having pain, because having pain doesn't always mean that you're doing damage. And when people have that sort of mindset, people tend to be afraid to move. And that leads us to a vicious cycle where people are afraid to move because they're in pain and they feel pain, they don't want to move. And to break that cycle, having a small amount of pain is okay. And when I often tell my clients, small amount of pain means that it's a pain that you experience whilst you're exercising, but something that's not long lasting, and something that doesn't affect your sleep, and something that makes you feel good after. That's the kind of pain that you want to be feeling when you're exercising. So changing that sort of mindset would be really helpful in, you know, helping you to get back into exercising. The other thing that I often say is music. Music is such a, we all listen to music on the way to work, on the way back home, cooking, anything before you go to bed. Music helps to calm our mind, that's one. But also it has a nice beat to it. And even if you're not dancing to the music, you're tapped to it, you hum it. So it helps to regulate our nervous system. It helps us to feel more confident in moving. So moving with music would help us feel more comfortable in moving. I don't know if that makes sense.
It really does, because it's taking your mind somewhere else. So you're not focusing on, am I feeling this pain? And yet you're getting that movement in an enjoyable way. And that's something I really, really try to promote, is movement's got to be enjoyable. It's not going to feel like a chore. It's got to be enjoyable. And yeah, and it changes, you know, going back to, again, you know, the link between the mind and the body, it's changing your mind. So then your body can move as well. And changing that mind, in so many situations, we make excuses for ourselves, don't we, that we can't do this because of X, Y, and Z, and then we let off the hook. Well, actually, that was great how you described it. You know, a small amount of pain is okay to work through, so long as it's not going to give you long-term complications. If it's going to make you feel better after, and in the long run, it's giving you positive impact, then that is good. That is good. We're digging deeper on this first question. We will move on, I promise you. I just wanted to clarify for the listeners as well the difference between OA and RA, because this often gets a little bit confusing. People get a bit mixed up with osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis. And am I correct? You can correct me in this scene maybe, but osteoarthritis, as you said, is usually with age. So you said the wrinkling one. Whereas rheumatoid arthritis can start at a young age and is usually symmetrical. So am I correct in saying this? Rheumatoid arthritis would usually happen on both sides of the body. Arthritis could just be one side. So for instance, if it was, you know, your joints in your hands, it's likely that both your joints in your both hands would experience rheumatoid arthritis. Whereas arthritis, it could potentially just be one. Is that correct?
Yes, that's... Yeah, you're one step closer to be a physio now.
I'm actually going back to my years and years ago in pharmaceuticals, and I was selling a product for arthritis pain. So yeah, just recapping on years and years of information from years ago. But yeah, so that's the difference, is it, between the two?
Yes. So rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease. So whereas osteoarthritis, as you mentioned, it's the degenerative, the aging sort of process. So autoimmune disease tend to be genetic, and with osteoarthritis, it's being diagnosed with x-rays and imaging, whereas with rheumatoid arthritis, it will be more blood tests. They will look for inflammatory markers, or basically inflammatory markers in the blood, to see whether you've got rheumatoid arthritis. And you're right in saying that rheumatoid arthritis tend to be more both sides, bilateral. Well, you know, both hands and both shoulders, whereas osteoarthritis, it could be one or it could be both joints. However, there are people who can get both osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis because both form of arthritis is a degenerative joint disease. And sometimes you can find that people with rheumatoid arthritis can have osteoarthritis because of the degenerative disease.
Yeah.
The treatments would be different for both as well.
Yes. So yeah, great point there. That yeah, that you know, we can't just put arthritis under one umbrella because the treatment options would be quite different. So important to create that distinction. So thank you, Z. Thank you. So moving on to the next question now. What's the latest information around chronic pain and how can physiotherapy help that chronic pain?
Okay. So as we mentioned, chronic pain is multifactorial. There's lots of things into it. So rather than seeking for one source of cure, the thing about chronic pain now is more of a management approach. It wouldn't be one form of treatment. It wouldn't be just medication. It wouldn't just be pain psychology. It wouldn't just be pain physiotherapy because it's so multifactorial. So it would be finding the different root of cause of the pain and target it from different directions, basically, to help to manage this. And it's one of those things that's very difficult because we can't say that treating chronic pain will get rid of it completely. It's having that acceptance that we're not seeking for a cure, whereas we're finding ways to help to manage it, to make it more manageable so you're able to carry on with your daily lives better. That would be the way forward. That is currently the way forward for chronic pain. In terms of how pain physiotherapy works, is we address the barriers to your physical health, re-educate and reintroducing movements using different sort of methods. So for example, this is a basic one I normally share with people, is that when one gets back pain from bending forwards, so bending forwards, it triggers your low back pain. Things like lying down on your back and hugging your knee to your chest helps to reintroduce this motion as it feels more control. You can control it better. It feels more stable. You're mentally feeling, okay, I am not putting myself in that triggering activity where I will have pain, but you're still doing the motion where you're sort of bending forwards. Does that make sense?
Yes. So you're feeling safe, aren't you? You're feeling safe as you're doing it. Whereas if people aren't feeling safe, they're probably going to experience more pain.
Absolutely. But that would be a good way to start to reintroduce that movement because you are still bending your back by doing that, but you're in more of a controlled environment.
Super tip. Thank you. Super. And yeah, just going back to that multifactorial approach, as with everything, and as we keep saying, it's not just one size fits all. So I really encourage you not just to take everything that you see off social media that says this is going to be the winning solution for you, because it's probably not. You've probably got to look at it from all different elements. And going back to that acceptance piece as well. Interesting with chronic pain, often people think that they're going to get rid of everything and be absolutely 100%. Sometimes it's just accepting your body and working with it rather than working against it, I suppose. So what is it that's different about the way that you work at Physiolotopy? How's that different to your normal physiotherapist that you go to see?
So as we mentioned above, pain is multifactorial. I feel like a broken tape just saying this over and over again. Pain is multifactorial. So how we work in Physiolotopy is we address the physical barrier to your pain and we do the usual physio treatment, but we also educate the other contributing factors and how to manage them better. For example, I'm working with a lady at the moment. She has been experiencing multiple joint pains and aches for over 10 years. And it is something that she has been struggling to manage. We sort of like break down what are the things that could be contributing to her pain and stress, sleep, physical activities, all that are aspects that are contributing to her pain that we found. So I've been working for with her for almost a year now, and she is doing a lot better compared to when we first started. I say this because she was struggling to sleep at night. She was struggling to even walk from her home to the shops and back. Whereas now she is sleeping better. She acknowledges the contributing factors to her pain, knowing how to manage them, and she's doing walks every day for 15 minutes. So it took us a year. So the thing about chronic pain is that it is a process. It's not something that will just turn over in the next month, 2 months, 3 months. It is an ongoing process that can take a while. But it's one of those things that I can't say you will feel better in a year, you will feel better in 2 years, because everyone is so different. And there is like you said, Anna, there's no one size fit all in this situation. So what I did with this lady particularly is we addressed the factors, as I mentioned, and we visualize the progress of her physical health. So what I've been doing with her is we've been doing breathing and hands-on therapy at the same time, because she finds that helps to calm her mind down, and she visualizes what is going on with her muscles. She feels that the muscles are loosening up and she feels better about it. She feels more pain, but it's the type of pain where she perceived that it's a good pain because she is getting somewhere. So having that sort of mindset helps to encourage her to do more and encourage her to feel that she is getting better. And she's actually physically doing more, sleeping better, and yeah, with all the progress that I mentioned earlier.
Amazing, what an incredible example that is. And I guess that I just has such a cumulative effect, doesn't it? So if she's managing to walk a little bit, get out in the fresh air, she's going to be sleeping better, she's going to be more confident in herself. If she can actually visualize her muscles and what's happened, I guess she feels a bit more of a sense of control as well over
Yeah.
what's going on. And there's nothing worse than feeling like really out of control with things. So
Yeah.
it'll help her to feel like she's making a difference, which is wonderful. Great example, thank you. So this next question I've got, I know that everybody listening to this is going to sit up straight as soon as I ask this question. I can feel myself trying to like position myself a little bit better now. So post-pandemic, there's been far, a sudden increase in the number of people working from home and hybrid. What can we do to support ourselves? So, if we've got a desk-based job, what is the best posture, for a desk-based job?
Ooh, I like this question. So I often tell my clients that decades, centuries ago, we were all once cavemen. We are all made to move. We are all made to hunt. So we are all made to move, basically. So what we often say in the physio world is that your best posture is your next posture. So we advise that moving every 20 minutes, every half an hour, changing your posture would be the best way to maintain and help with your joints and, your joint pains, basically, because there's no such thing as the best posture. Standing upright, sitting upright, all of that, you're still maintaining in that one posture and one fixed posture. So yes, as mentioned, the best posture is your next posture. So often moving around, get up, go to the printer, get up, go to your toilet, or even just standing up, sit down, stretch for 2, 3 minutes, and then carry on working. All of that would be beneficial because the small changes make the biggest changes.
Definitely, definitely. And sometimes it's about being brave and being a little bit different to the other people that you're working with and actually putting your own health first. So, for instance, saying, does this meeting have to be a Zoom? Does it have to be a Teams? Could we do it as a walk and talk? I need a bit of movement. I want to maintain good musculoskeletal health. I want to feel good mentally as well. Maybe encouraging more walk and talks in your team meetings, drinking that much that you need to go to the toilet so that it makes you move, putting prompts on your computer that makes you stand. Just try to incorporate all those little bits of movement. And I don't know if you'd agree, but often people think, well, I've done an hour in gym this morning, I'm okay now to sit all day. But are you suggesting it's better to do hour in the gym and then sit, or maybe break it up into little chunks during the day?
The latter, definitely, because like I said, we are all made to move. We can't tell ourselves, okay, we've gone to the gym this morning for an hour. Let me sit for the rest of the 23 hours in the day. Yeah. And the one thing that I often suggest to my clients as well is instead of sitting on a chair, sit on a gym ball, a big gym ball, because that ensures that you will move, bouncing on the ball, moving your pelvis side to side, front and back, all of that encourage little movement for the bigger change.
Yeah. Small steps leap health. That's the phrase,
Yeah.
definitely. So
A
just
good.
all those small little things that are a little bit more achievable as well. It's not always achievable for everyone to get to the gym for an hour, whereas just some little breaks during the day, 5 minutes movement here and there, all has that cumulative effect. So yeah, key message, frequent rates, keep moving, and your next posture is the best posture. So we can all breathe and relax after all sat there, sat up straight, thinking that we need to change our posture. So you did allude to, we're just going to touch on another couple of points now, but it's New Year. People are probably thinking right now, what does the next year hold for me? What changes am I going to make? How am I going to push myself, to push my performance, as well as my health? But what really gave you the push to set up on your own after you'd had a secure job within the NHS? What really drove you to do something a little bit different? And what would you advise people in terms of making that change? How can you have the confidence and motivation to make that change?
Oh, I've been thinking about running my own practice for many years and even way before the pandemic, but I didn't really have that confidence to do that because risk, that's the big thing, is it? It's taking risk, losing a secure job, secure pay, and a lot of uncertainties. But what I found more, what's the word? Was not success, but satisfying. That's the word. What's more satisfying for me is being able to do the work I want to do, which is why I created Physiolosophy, because I can work the way I want to work with my clients, seeing the way they progress, the way that I want to, using my method. And I think that drove me more than anything to start. Physiolosophy, and that gave me the confidence. I think what really sh stuck to me was I was chatting to a friend about it, and all he said was, "Just do it. What have you got to lose?" And I just thought, "What will I lose? I can try this for 6 months. I can try this for a year and see where things go." And here I am, 2 years down the line, and I'm still doing it.
Amazing, amazing. There's a few things I picked up on that. And one of the phrases you said, just do it. I actually did a vision board at the end of last year. And my phrase that I chose, I've got the Nike logo on there, just do it. You've just got to try things out. And I love that approach. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But you know that you've tried. And sometimes we hold back a lot, don't we? Thinking, oh, what might other people think? Or what if it goes wrong? Well, so what? You've tried, and you've got that peace of mind that you've actually tried,
Exactly.
and you learn from it. And fortunately, you've made the right decision, and you're doing amazing. So, but yeah, it's all about trying and picking up on that as well around what you're really loving doing, and you've got to be in something that you're really passionate about to be at your best, and be yourself, be able to be your authentic self, and treat the clients that you see in the best way you possibly can, which is
Yeah.
great too. So, if anyone sat on the fence right now thinking, oh, should I do what I'm really passionate about? Should I do what, I've had a burning desire to do for ages, just do it. Just try it. Just try it.
I feel like nothing is worse than thinking, what ifs, all the what ifs.
Exactly. And I think, yeah, age got me to that stage of thinking life isn't forever. I don't want to have what ifs.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we're drawing to a close now. And very quickly, could you tell us what are some false claims about pain? What are people plastering out there about pain, which is utter nonsense?
As I mentioned at the top, the first thing that people often tell me is my scan will tell me why I'm in pain.
Yes,
So that's absolutely not always the case. Let's put it that way. And the other thing is, people often say taking painkillers is masking my pain. So, because it all depends on what type of painkillers you're taking and what is it treated for. For example, the NSAIDs, the ibuprofen, Nurofen, those are anti-inflammatories. Anti-inflammatories can be beneficial, are meant to reduce inflammation, and they are good to take further down the line rather than at the beginning of the stage. If our body struggles to reduce inflammation in the body that we feel that is contributing to the pain, taking some of that, a course of that would be helpful just to give our body a bit of a boost, a bit of a catalyst to recover. And other types of pain, like nerve pains, some of the nerve pain medication are actually forms of antidepressants. So yes, so that helps with reducing nerve pain, but also it is an antidepressant. So that does tell us a lot, doesn't it? That mental health pain, especially in persistent pain as well, the whole relation and the whole multifactorial thing that we mentioned about chronic pain.
Oh, I've learned something there. I didn't know that about the nerve pain and being antidepressant.
Yeah,
I'm
and
going to
anti-epileptics as well.
learn something new every day. I'm going to be researching that. And I'm going back to that NSAID as well. If if you can't move and you're getting no movement and painkillers can enable you to move, then that has a benefit on other areas of your health as well. So,
It's also acknowledging when to put a stop to that as well. So it's not something that you want to take for the rest of your life. It's just a little boost to help you progress.
Thank you. Thank you. And finally, to close, what are your top tips for reducing pain in your everyday habits? So what are we doing in our everyday world that could actually be causing us pain, and we're just continuing to do it because we're not aware of it?
Well, the number one, we're going to go back to what Leap Health says as well, small changes. And that would be prioritizing yourself, hydrate regularly, even something as small as making your bed every morning. Because making your bed every morning, you would think, okay, I've done my small achievement this morning and I'm happy with myself. And when you're happy, you're mentally more prepared, you're emotionally stronger, and you feel like, okay, I've achieved these small little bits. And small little achievements for the big ones, and all of that makes you feel better, and all of that will help to reduce pain. And the reason why I say prioritizing yourself is because through my clinical experience, people come to me and say, I have this pain, I tried doing our exercises, but I have this to do, I have that to do, I haven't got time to do my exercises. It shows that you're putting yourself at the probably down the bottom of the priority list. And there are times where things may be inevitable. You have to prioritize some other things before yourself at some point, but try not to let it drag for days, weeks, months, or years of this, because if you're often at the bottom of the list, you'll never get yourself up there. And this applies the same with your exercises. As we know, if we sat at the desk all day, allocating like 10, 15 minutes of your time to give yourself some stretches, some self-love, all of that will, all of these small changes will give you big changes in the future.
So true, so true. And yeah, priorities are very individualized, aren't they? And we can talk ourselves into what's a priority and what's not a priority. But talking about putting yourself first sometimes, it's a bit against our culture, isn't it? It feels a bit selfish. But actually, sometimes you have to visualize how could you actually help others more by prioritizing yourself first? And we're less used to other people if we haven't managed our own health first and fastened our own seatbelt first. We're less used to other people. So actually, you're doing other people a favor by prioritizing yourself.
And often find that I say this to busy moms, moms with three kids, moms with, a housewives, housewife alone is a job. Like, I got a gift to all of the housewives out there, mom, wife. You play so much roles in their life, really. And I often say to them, you have to look after yourself to look after other people. If you're unwell, what do do your children lose the people that they rely on? So definitely prioritize yourself in that way for the longer term benefits.
Definitely, and consider it as leading by example. You want your kids to be able to do this when they're older. Try leading by example. And often, if I'm doing my little workout in the morning, do half an hour in the morning, and the kids are pestering me, I'll say, "Mommy does this to make me feel happy." And I want them to remember that when they're older. I'd also like them to listen to what you've just said there about making your bed in the morning. I would love my kids to listen to you tell them that, because they don't listen to me. So I think we're going to close on that. Have you got anything else you want to tell our listeners, maybe where they can find you, anything that I've missed out to ask you, anything else you want to add before we close?
So I'm on all social media platforms. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. I'm happy to receive any emails if anyone have any questions and how they can find me, or any basic advice that I'm actually happy to share, because I do enjoy sharing my knowledge and educate people on how to look after themselves better. Because if we're all happy, we are in a better world, aren't we? I always think that.
We are. And thank you so much for your knowledge and expertise today. It's been really fascinating exploring pain management. And I hope, from listening to this today, maybe take away one or two golden nuggets that you can apply into your life. And if you've enjoyed the episode, please share it with other people. I'm sure you know it's probably over a third of the population that suffer from chronic pain. This could help someone. So I'm sure you know someone who is suffering with that chronic pain. So thank you once again for listening. Please do get in touch with Z if you want any more information. And I will look forward to speaking with you soon on our next episode. Thank you.
Thank you.
So before you stop listening, I want you to think about how you can make health contagious. Did anything resonate in the podcast? What did you learn that was new? Did you hear something that you thought someone else would love to hear? If so, please share this podcast. Please leave me a review, or please get in touch at anna@leaphealth.co.uk to learn more about how you can improve physical and mental health of individuals and those in the workplace, so that everybody can feel happier and healthier and more productive. Thank you.